Good morning.
Good morning.
A question is in the mail this morning from England. It opens up a very interesting subject. The letter, first of all, was one of appreciation for the April letter on the subject of immortality, and then one of appreciation for the fact that the message of the infinite way combines the letter of truth with the spirit of truth and makes an important point of the letter of truth, since this man, who is a metaphysical teacher, has realized that trying to convey a spiritual idea without the letter of truth to act or to serve as an introduction, something into which we can get our teeth, is a difficult matter. And then the question comes up, how are these messages to be given to the man in the street, more especially since the man in the street seems to have no desire to know anything about the realities, and if he's of the younger generation, hasn't even an intellect that could accept them, since the educational system of today deprives people of their intellect, substituting superstition and probably playtimes for education. Now, the question is interesting from this standpoint. If Jesus Christ were all the things that Scripture credits him with being, and if that could not be imparted to the man in the street, to average you and me, his life would only be that of a miracle worker, and then we could naturally say, well, what of it? Much in the same way that we would go to the theater to watch a great magician, but since we couldn't do those tricks of magic, we would just watch this great one perform his things for us. If the great truths revealed to the spiritual seers of all ages couldn't be conveyed to the world at large, then these seers would only be, so far as we're concerned, magicians or miracle workers with no import in our experience. But you see, the fact that there have been a dozen of these saints or more must indicate that in some way it is possible for us to become aware of these truths, these principles, and embody them in our experience. And if it is possible for us to embody these great truths and demonstrate them and in some measure live them, it must be possible for all mankind. There is no such thing as a law of God which is meant for one man or for one group of men. There is no such thing as a law of God which is meant for us but not for our neighbors outside. It certainly would not be loving our neighbor as ourselves to believe that we have some capacity for good living that they haven't got. Now, it is true that if you present this message to the world as a spiritual truth or spiritual reality, you find that the public has no interest in it. If you present it to them as a way to get healthy, wealthy, and wise, they will have interest not in the message, but in getting healthy, wealthy, and wise, and thereby they lose the message. So the question comes, can you present this message in its purity and expect the world to lay aside its desire for demonstrating things and persons and conditions? Or must you present it as a way to demonstrate things, conditions, and persons, and trust that they will go further? Or is there yet another way? And the answer is this. There is yet another way. Never can we present a pure spiritual teaching to what is called this world. As a matter of fact, Jesus said, "My kingdom is not of this world, for I have overcome this world." So it would be an impossibility to present a message of this kind to this world and expect it to receive it. Nor would it be possible to take the other end of the stick and present it as a way of demonstration and expect the message to be understood. Since once you focus a person's attention on supplying them with the things which they already believe they need and want, you have no way of lifting their thought above those immediate desires into the realm of the spiritually real. Now, I say there is yet another way. And this other way constitutes what I myself use in presenting this work to the public, because it was evident to me too in the beginning that the public could never accept this work. As a matter of fact, there weren't too many of my own patients or students ready or willing to see that this was a lifting of oneself into a spiritual realm rather than bringing the spiritual realm down into making a better human experience. But this is the unfoldment that is actually responsible for whatever spread of the message there has been. And I'm repeating it to you, not with any idea of your thinking of it in terms of the message of the infinite way, but so that you may embody it in your experience and thereby meet whatever problems present themselves to you as persons. I don't think for a minute that this is simple. Or that it's easy for me to present it to you. So let us be very, very much of one mind, receptive and responsive, so that you catch the point. Error is never a person. It is never a thing. It is never a condition. And so, never must we handle or take into our thought a person a thing or a condition. It is true. Error always appears as a person or a condition, and that is what has fooled the spiritual workers of the world, that error always appears as a person or a condition or a thing, and immediately there is aroused in the individual a rebellion, a resentment, or a battle against the person, the place, the circumstance, or the condition, and the war is lost. No person on earth or group of people are our enemies. No sin and no disease is our opponent or antagonist. The longer you fight a person, a disease, a sin, or a condition, the longer you will be embroiled in what is called this world. Now, you may walk out the door and trip on something that has no right to be there, and you may blame it on that thing being there, or the person or the animal that placed it there, and thereby you lose your demonstration of harmony. Because it had nothing to do with that person, that animal, that thing. In the same way, there may be some individual or group of individuals standing between you and your harmony. And you are trying to treat them, or treat for them, or treat that something be done about them. In other words, you are in antagonism, in resentment, in rebellion against them, and you are directing your energies toward overcoming them or removing them or bringing them into harmony, thereby losing your demonstration. There may be some disease standing between you and harmony, and you are battling it, and thereby digging a grave. If I had gone out into this world trying to convince people about the rightness of the message of the infinite way, I probably still would be sitting in a little office in Hollywood with a few people calling on me once in a while. But the secret is this. There is a universal force, a universal belief, a universal hypnotism, which is the source of every discord that comes into our experience. Every limitation, every sin, every temptation, every disease that comes to us is but an effect of a universal force or power, which, remember, in and of itself is not power. It is only power because of acceptance in the human mind. If it were a power, we couldn't overcome it. If it were a power, we couldn't dispel it. It is not a power, but to world sense, it is the only power which we have to consider in the meeting of sin, disease, death, lack or limitation. In other words, what I'm trying to say is this: no person is ever dying. Now try to understand this. No person is ever dying. And if you're ever called upon to help the case of a person who seems to be near death, don't try to save their life, because you won't succeed. But handle the age-old universal belief of a life apart from God, a life which had a beginning and must have ending, handle the universal mesmerism of death. Because, you see, there is a universal hypnotism which says that everybody who's born must die. And that same hypnotism says we were born, that we were created of matter, born of man and woman. Now, this is not a personal belief. This isn't just the belief of you individually as a mother or as a father. This is a universal belief that existed since time began. It is a universal belief in birth, which results in a universal belief in death. And what we're handling here is not birth or death, but the universal belief, the universal hypnotism, which appears as an individual person dying. Let's put it this way. Close your eyes for a moment. And let us go over on Sunday afternoon to the park to hear the band. The Royal Hawaiian Band. We're standing in front of the bandstand. And there is a band up on that stand, and everyone up there has an instrument in their hands. The conductor has a baton. And now, is there a single person there? No. Is there a single instrument there? No. But you're sitting looking directly at it. Yes. But they're not there. No. What is there? What is the fabric of every person you're seeing up on that bandstand? Your imagination is the fabric. Your imagination is the substance out of which those men and those instruments are formed. In fact, your imagination is the fabric, the substance of which the whole bandstand is made. So whether now you have human men and women on that platform, metal instruments, or a wooden bandstand, the substance is all the same, imagination. There's no wood there, there's no flesh and blood there, there's no metal there, there is only imagination. Do you follow that? Can you follow that? Do you see that? Do you see that there's no flesh and blood up there? Do you see that there's no wood and no metal up there? That there's only your imagination formed as men, women, wood, metal. Supposing you were dreaming right now, and now you're dreaming that you're out here in the water, and, as you look around, you find you got out too far, and now you can't get back. And now begins your struggle to get back. And there you are, out in this water, struggling. Is there a you? Is there water? Is there a struggle? No. What is the fabric or substance of the person you're seeing in the water? What is the fabric and substance of the water? What is the fabric and substance of the struggle? Your dream. Your dream. The dream is the substance, and you and the water and the struggle are the objects, which are formed by your dream. Now, if we were to take this leather cover and make a man here and a piano here, and the sky over here, we would still have neither man, piano, nor sky. We would have leather. In the destruction of leather, there would be the destruction of the man, the piano, and the sky. In the destruction of your dream, there was the destruction of the you in the water and the struggle. In the destruction of your imagination, there was the disappearance of the band and of the instruments and of the bandstand, right? Now, supposing in that first case you had started out to eliminate each one of the men from the bandstand, you'd have still been left with instruments after a hard struggle getting rid of all those men. Then you'd have to get to work tearing out those instruments. And after you got through with that, you'd have to tear out the bandstand. And you could have done all that by stopping your imagination in one stroke. Right? Supposing you were dreaming of struggling in the water, and instead of crying out for someone to rescue you, you just had somebody wake you out of the dream. By the breaking up of the dream, there would be the breaking up of the you in the water, and the water, and the struggle, right? So it is. The fabric of the discords of human experience is a universal hypnotism, a universal belief, or a series of universal beliefs. That's the fabric of every sense of limitation that can come into your experience, whether it's limited finances or limited health or limited family relations or limited human relations or limited business or discordant experiences. The fabric of it is this universal hypnotism, this universal belief of a universe apart from God. Now, when Jesus says, "I have overcome the world," he did not mean that he had overcome all the people in the world and all the evils of the peoples in the world, because his ministry didn't last long enough to battle all those people. He overcame the world in one stroke by realizing that the world that needed overcome was made up of this mesmeric illusion, and all he had to do was destroy the mesmeric illusion and all the people and all the circumstances and all the conditions of limitation disappeared. Do you follow that? Now, if I were to think in terms of spreading the message of the infinite way to this person, that person, and this group and that group, I just couldn't stay on earth long enough to spread the infinite way even as far as it has already spread in these few years. Nobody could go out in the world and sell the message of the infinite way to this many people by their human efforts to reach people. But in one stroke it's accomplished, with the realization that the ignorance that would separate people from a realization of truth isn't personal to you or me or to the people of the world. It is a universal ignorance, a universal sense of hypnotism, which always is without presence or power. If we gave it presence or power, we would have it as a battling agency forever. Now just see this. So far as I am personally concerned, the universal ignorance that would separate people from understanding, apprehending, demonstrating the message of the infinite way is not a personal one. It has nothing to do with their personal selves or their education or lack of it or their religious training or lack of it. It has to do with a universal ignorance, a universal mesmerism, which is forever without presence and without power. You follow that? Always your realization that you're dealing with the fabric, not the pictures that the fabric presents, but the fabric itself, that is your saving grace. In other words, we never have a dying person or a diseased person. We have a state of universal hypnotism appearing as a sick, sinful, or dying, or dead person. Can you follow that? We never have a bad person. We have a state of universal hypnotism or ignorance, appearing as a person. The moment we realize that, the person disappears in the fabric along with them. And then we are unable to behold them as they really are. That is why to get resentful of a person or condition is just to mire yourself into it. To battle a person or a condition is to get embroiled in it, is to get ensnared in it. There is only one way to escape from the delusion of sense. There is only one way to escape from evil people, evil plots, evil plans, evil of any form in the world, and that is to stop battling them and to realize that behind them is the fabric, the dream fabric of which they are constituted. And to know that that dream fabric is illusory, has no actual creative principle since God did not create it. Therefore, it has no existence, no law to sustain it, no substance, no continuity. That destroys it. Now, there is no clearer illustration than this one, because it is extreme. We have no dying person. We have an illusory sense of death. When we handle that, the dying person jumps up and says, "Here I am, all new and fresh." Because you haven't done anything to a dying person which didn't exist to begin with. You destroyed the fabric of the appearance, the fabric of that which was appearing. There's no other way. There is no other way of overcoming this world. This vision came to me through, and behind it is every bit of healing work that is ever done in my experience. This experience came to me, this unfoldment, because of a paragraph that is in a book concerning the life of Buddha. This life of Buddha was showing the experience that came to him at that time when he still knew nothing of disease in the world, of death in the world, of any form of limitation in the world. And on his first trip out into the world, he beheld a sick man, a corpse, and a beggar. And he was horrified that such things could exist, because the life, the way his father had planned it for him, no such things were allowed to appear, so that he had never witnessed any of them. And he asked his counselor, "Are these the only cases of this in the world?" "Oh, no, everyone comes to this eventually." Oh, well, that horrified. That was unthinkable, that in such a beautiful universe as he knew, such conditions as disease, death, and poverty could come. And this is the question that came into his mind, and it gave me the solution to the whole thing. I must find how to remove sin, disease, and death from the world. That was it. He never thought about going out and healing people. He never thought of going out and reforming people or enriching people. The thought that came to him was, how do you remove sin, disease, and death from the world? Now, you've heard me say over and over again that this isn't a question of going out into the world to be a do-gooder. This Infinite Way message is a revelation of how to remove sin, disease, and death from the world. And ignorance, the ignorance that separates people from truth. And this is the way. This is the way. People are only incidental to our ministry. The actual ministry itself is the removal of ignorance, sin, fear, death, limitation from the world. And that is to be accomplished not by going out and getting enough money to make everybody a millionaire, not by having enough strikes in the world to give everybody a living wage, not by having enough wars in the world to kill off enough of the population so that there's less to feed, but to break the entire mesmerism of limitation, ignorance, sin, fear, disease, death. Now, you have heard me say that when I am asked for help, I never take a person or their condition into my consciousness. Do you remember that? Do you know that? This is the reason. The person and the condition is the decoy that would fool you. You just play around long enough trying to help people and conditions, and you'll find yourself up to your neck in people and conditions. And they'll always be on the erroneous side. But to really be of help to anyone, stop thinking of the person and the condition and realize that they represent only a picture, an image, an appearance of the fabric that is presenting itself to you, which is this universal belief, this universal dream. It's called the mortal dream. It's called mortal mind. It's called the universal illusion. It's called by many names. Makes no difference what name you use for them, as long as you realize that it is a universal sense which in and of itself has no law to sustain it, no cause, no effect, no person. Now, we are never going to solve our individual problems any more than we are going to solve national and international problems by trying to change people, heal them, or reform them, or enrich them. We are only going to bring harmony, first of all, into our individual world by seeing every discordant person, thing, condition as a picture produced by this illusory substance called the dream of mortal mind, or universal illusion, or universal hypnotism, universal belief, if you like, universal nothingness, appearing as people, appearing as conditions. Never try to save a dying person. Never try to save a poor person or enrich one. Never try to cure a diseased person. Always instantly remember that you are dealing not with a person, not with a condition, not with a thing, but with an hypnotic suggestion, with an hypnotic influence, with an hypnotic picture, which has no existence outside of the human mind, human belief, human appearance. Then you will find that you destroy the entire fabric of which all error is made. Every condition of limitation, whether it is limited finances, limited health, limited morals, limited living conditions, is but the expression of a universal hypnotism, a universal illusion, a series of universal beliefs. The beliefs, actually, when you reduce them to individual experiences, a belief of a selfhood apart from God, a belief of a cause apart from God, a belief of a law apart from God, a belief of a selfhood apart from God, a belief of a being apart from God, a belief of a life apart from God, a belief of substance apart from God, a belief of wisdom apart from God, of knowledge apart from God. This whole series of beliefs put together constitute a mesmeric influence making us see limited persons, places, things, and conditions. You can break down this Adam dream into its component parts, and you'll find that the Adam dream is made up of the belief of a life apart from God, of a selfhood or a law apart from God, of a substance or an activity or a cause apart from God. Every time you're called upon for the solution of a problem, see if there isn't a person involved in it. You'll find there is. And then you'll see that since God is the only creative principle, it can't be the child of God that's involved in it. So it can only be this belief of a selfhood apart from God. See if every problem that comes to you doesn't come to you as a condition. Can it be a condition of God? No, because it wouldn't then be a problem. But the mere fact that it comes as a condition shows that it is an appearance of a condition which has no real existence. Because actually there is neither a person nor a condition apart from God. Then any appearance of such must be a part of what's called the Adam dream, or the mortal dream, or the illusory sense of existence, or, Jesus called it, this world. You know that we would all find it very simple to meet the cases that come to us for help if we could just say, this world, and smile at it. If we could say, oh, this is just a condition of this world, the illusory world, not of the real world, not of God's world, and then drop it. You'd be surprised how quickly it would yield. Yes, just as if we went outside and saw children playing some game on the street in which they had drawn their circle and chalk on the walk, and then some child was imprisoned in it, and that child couldn't escape from its prison until something happened. And you'd look at it and smile and say, yes, that's in the child world. And so instead of bothering to go and extricate the child from its prison, you would just smile and walk on, knowing that in reality it was not in any prison, it was in a child world. So you would find that as you can get used to the idea that everything that appears in any limited sense, whether as person or condition, is a part of this world, meaning the dream world, the atom world, the unreal world, and then walk on right by it, you'd find how quickly the illusion would be broken for your patient, or your friend, or your relative. You see, the difficulty lies in this, that we witness some untoward condition out there or some evil person, and we actually accept it as taking place, which we know in our heart and soul that couldn't be if there is a God at all. If there is a God at all, there is no such thing as an illusory person or condition. There is no such thing as an evil person, place, thing. But we first see it, and then we seek to do something about it. Is that clear? We first see it, and then we seek to do something about it, and thereby we are embroiled in it. Whereas, if we could see it, and then remember that the fabric of it is the dream material, the imagination, the illusory sense of a universe apart from God or this world, and say, oh, that's just this world, and then pass it by, we would break the dream. We would break the dream of limitation. The minute we ourselves become dehypnotized. Now, all there is to a practitioner is a person who, in some measure, is dehypnotized, who, in some measure, is not afraid of appearances and doesn't start to fight them. That is the only difference between a practitioner and a non-practitioner. Because the conditions out here are the same to both. Out here is sin, disease, and death. And your non-practitioner looks at them and says, oh, how terrible. But your practitioner, if they've really arrived at practitioner consciousness, looks out there and says, this world, hypnotism, nothingness. And then goes right on about their business of living. Now, there is a universal ignorance which has gripped the mind of practically every individual on earth that makes them unfriendly to truth, makes them antagonistic to truth. Why? Because truth received in consciousness wipes out the very things which humanhood has learned to love. Pomp and glory of personal selfhood, personal powers, personal strength, personal wisdom, personal glory, personal achievement. And so the human mind is in rebellion at once to anything that would destroy it. The human mind doesn't like to hear, I can of my own self do nothing. The human mind doesn't like to hear, why callest thou me good? There is but one good, the Father in heaven. The human mind is set on glorifying itself. Oh, see my strength, see my wisdom, see my beauty, see my powers, see my health, see my wealth. I did that. I did all that. There is only one thing holding back harmony from our personal experience. That is this universal sense of life or selfhood apart from God, law apart from God. There is only one way to break that sense of limitation, and that is to withdraw from the battle in the world. Withdraw from battling and opposing people and conditions and withdrawing inside of ourselves and say, oh, that's this world. And then go forward with those things that you have to do next and carry them through. When we are told that there is no use praying if we have aught against any man, we just stop praying. The world does. Rather than go and make peace with their brother. Oh, why not let my brother make peace with me? Why should I go out and do it all? And so the world keeps on either not praying or praying in such a manner as to ensure that there will be no answer to his prayer, which is by not first making peace with his brother, or as our friend here said, pray for peace every day, but your prayers won't be answered unless you are living the Christian life. Oh, well, we're not going to live the Christian life, but we'll keep on praying just the same, even though it isn't going to get us anywhere. To live the Christian life means to accept the teaching that resulted in a Christian world. To live a Christian life means to love thy neighbor as thyself. First of all, to love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy mind, with all thy soul, and then to love thy neighbor as thyself. But these are nothing but meaningless platitudes until we begin to take them apart in our own mind and arrive at some definite meaning for them. So that when we say, thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, with all thy mind, what do we mean by it, and how do we do it? Well, each one may have a different experience, but mine, of course, was the fact that to love the Lord thy God with all thy heart means to have all faith in the infinite invisible as the reality of life, appearing outwardly as effect, and therefore not to unduly love and never to hate or fear that which is in the physical or mental realm. Even that requires a lot of study before one comes to the realization of its depth, of the depth of its meaning. We are not to unduly love that which appears in this physical or mental realm. We are never to fear or hate that which appears in this physical and mental realm, and thereby we break the mesmeric dream of a selfhood or a universe apart from God. On the other hand, we are to love our neighbor as ourselves. And this means to acknowledge that God is the selfhood of all real being. God is the selfhood of every individual on the face of this globe, even when they are appearing as sick, sinful, and dying humanity. God is the selfhood. God is the life. God is the intelligence. God is the law of every individual on the face of this globe, even when in the mesmeric dream they appear to be sick, sinning, stupid humanity. To love our neighbor as ourselves means actually to acknowledge God as the very being of all that appears, regardless of the mesmeric appearance that is confronting us. Now, when we follow those two commandments, we can readily see that all of these appearances of a sick, sinning, dying, ignorant humanity are but the images of thought created by this world dream. The master calls this world. Once we see that, we won't love those pictures any more than we'll hate them or fear them. All we will love is the reality behind those pictures. We won't love the people of this world any more than we will hate or fear the people of this world. What we will love is that which constitutes people, God, the Christhood, the spirit and soul of every individual on earth. That's the only way it really is possible to love this world, because you can't love the appearances that people present to you. You just can't do it. That is, most of them. But if you look through what they are presenting to you, to that which they really are, that which really constitutes their being, you can't help loving everyone, whether it appears as man, woman, child, or whether it appears as animal or insect. You can't help it. Once you have perceived that there is an invisible soul which is the real being of everyone, then you look right through the appearance, you like look right through their eyes, and you see the very soul of them which sits behind those eyes. Now, in training yourself to look through the eyes of people and animals as you meet them, you really come automatically to where you are no longer loving, hating, or fearing the appearance world, or what Jesus called this world. And in proportion to that, you can say, I have overcome this world. I no longer hate it, nor fear it, nor love it. I no longer try to get rid of it. I no longer try to fight it or battle it. I see through it. And through it, behind it, I see that which really is Godhood. And I also see that that which appears to be is but the images in thought made up of the fabric of a dream world. Let's stop a moment. Now, the time will come when you will recognize that whereas there are other lessons which lift us up to cloud nine, there are other lessons that seem to be more spiritual, more uplifting. And you will know that there are other lessons you'd rather read or listen to than this one. The day will come when you will recognize that you can do without all the other lessons and all the other books there are in the whole teaching and exchange them all for this one. But that doesn't by any manner of means mean that you can give this lesson to beginners, because you can't. They have no background, they have no foundation through which to receive it. This is, without any question of doubt, the not only deepest lesson of the message of the Infinite Way, it is the one I give seldom, probably not more than four times in 8 years. Have I given this lesson? And then, not in just this way, but the subject of this lesson has been given to classes four times in 8 years. And actually, it forms the chapter, The New Horizon, which I still find no students making a serious effort, or very few students making serious efforts to understand or to demonstrate. But this is the lesson of the chapter New Horizon. This is the lesson on healing, because if you are able to heal spiritually without knowing this lesson, you will be very apt to lose your healing gift eventually, because it engenders a blind faith or a faith in a personal gift. Whereas spiritual healing has nothing to do with either blind faith or with a personal gift. Spiritual healing has to do with the understanding of the spiritual principle of life. And that has to do with this, that God is the principle of life, and that God maintains and sustains this universe, including everyone in it, in absolute spiritual integrity. Whereas, on the other hand, you have an appearance world, a dream world, a mesmeric world, which has no law to support it, no substance to sustain it, no continuity, except such as that which we, in our ignorance, give it by not recognizing that it's constituted of this world, nothingness, dream fabric. Once you perceive this, you will have a healing principle which will stand by you regardless of the nature of the problems that are brought to you. Doesn't by any manner of means mean that you'll heal everybody or every condition, not because this principle won't do it, but because the people involved are not yet ready to live this principle or live by this principle, not yet ready to give up those things which would interfere with the demonstration of this principle. In other words, just as we have Jesus saying that the rich man can in no wise enter heaven. In other words, not even Jesus himself would have attempted to take the rich man into heaven. Why? Not because of his wealth in and of itself, but because the man's faith, confidence, hope was in his wealth. All that he expected of life and wanted of life was by virtue of his wealth. That man cannot be lifted into spiritual consciousness. And so it is, there are people even coming to us for healing who want healing, but only the healing of their pains and discord, not the healing of the conditions which caused them, produced them. And so it is that even having this principle, don't think that you have an abacadabra that will enable you just to walk up and down the world healing anybody and everybody your little heart fancies. No, no, no. But this principle is so absolute that given any fair opportunity with anybody at all susceptible to the spiritual life, you will bring harmony into their experience and you will enable them to come into spiritual enlightenment. Because this is the secret of all secrets. This is the secret of spiritual living. This is the secret not found in the literature of the world. That is why when you read inspirational literature, you usually end up saying, isn't that beautiful? It was inspiring, but I still have the same problems to face tomorrow. That is the reason that the inspirational literature of the world in and of itself is not enough, because while it will lift us up and make us receptive to the Spirit, it doesn't provide the truth necessary to our unfoldment. And I can tell you this, no one is ever going to be able to give you the truth except the truth that the discords, limitations, and inharmonies of this world are not real. They are of the fabric of that substance which is illusion, this world, nothingness. And when you treat it that way, instead of treating individual man, woman, child, and condition, you will have the secret of overcoming this world. And I can't add to that. Thank you.